Hey, everybody, and welcome back to season 5 of Indie Film Cafe. I'm your host, Jonathan Moody, and I've got an awesome show for you planned. But before we get into that, let me introduce my co-host. Please welcome yourself, Mr. Pauly Prezenza.
Hey, it's the Naked Moo Cow here with my shirt off because of this particular movie.
Yes, you can't see it, but his shirt is off right now. You know, he did it because, you know, everybody's shirtless in this movie. So, you know, why not?
It'll be just Jen for you.
All right. And with us, we have a very special guest. James L. Edwards is in the house. Yay. How are you doing, James?
Hello there. Thank you for having me for the first episode for the season. I appreciate that.
Yes. And it's your first time actually on Indie Film Cafe itself.
That's true.
Yeah, you were on 31 Days of Indie Horror, and we've had you as a guest on Indie Film Cafe Spotlight. So this is, and we've reviewed a ton of your movies already. So
I greatly appreciate that.
Yes, so we love getting the word out.
You are one of our favorite indie folks. So
thank you. Yes. Thank you, guys.
And you guys can expect that we're actually going to have a few of our guests be people that we've reviewed their film. So get ready. This is going to be a fantastic season. So let's get into this movie real quick. The movie that we are going to be doing is Miami Connection.
Yay.
And we'll talk about more about that, but
Miami in this film, so much.
And we'll talk about that, but I'm really excited because I had to pick the first movie of the season, and I had to pick something that was going to start off pretty strong, I thought. and we'll talk about how we got into that, but before then, let's listen to some Moon
music.
And we are back. We all watched this separately. Yes. And James, am I correct to say that you actually own a copy of this movie?
I do own a copy of Miami Connection. So nice. I ended up watching the Draft House Blu-ray that came out. And I believe is out of print now.
Wow. Yeah, I saw it's like going for like $100, you know.
Now. Well, if there are any buyers, please feel free to contact me.
You could sell it on Amazon or eBay.
It's probably, I'll be honest with you. I'm going to be probably the negative one on this one. There are certain films that I try about once or twice a year, or I'm sorry, once every other year or so, that I know I should like, and I just don't. And they're surprising. Typically it's like Suspiria, Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Really? Suspiria?
I'm trying to think what else. Taxi Driver, surprisingly enough.
Wow.
So I'm well aware that I should like these movies, and I keep giving them chances. For some reason, I just don't connect with them. With Miami Connection, I'm completely baffled. I don't know if I'm just too stuffy for the film or what, but I couldn't get into it. I couldn't do it.
So are you saying there's no James L. Edwards connection?
There is no James L. Edwards connection. There's a lot of Miami in this movie, but not a James L. Edwards connection, unfortunately.
But we know you've spent so much time being a rock and roll ninja person. So how is this
maybe possible? I was just too close to the source material. You're right. Maybe that's what it is. And that's the thing. It's not even a thing where it's like, I don't like bad movies. I love bad movies. You know, I mean, I love The Room. I love Hell of the Living Dead. I love Pieces. I love The Greasy Strangler.
We just saw that.
Love The Greasy Strangler. Those are some of my favorite movies, but this one, I literally just sat there bored out of my mind. I hate to say it.
Oh my goodness. Yeah,
I can see you up on stage throwing stars from your keytar. I mean,
yeah. So let me go into a little backstory of this movie that we're like, it's going to be an interesting show. I can guarantee it. But So basically what happened was the director of the film, the original director of the film, Woo-Sang Park, aka Richard Park, he made this movie with YK Kim, who basically knew Taekwondo, and he was a big Taekwondo guy.
Put my shirt back on because it's a little chilly.
Oh, is that why? Okay.
Yeah.
Chilly
over here.
Now I feel bad for all the people that were shirtless in all these movies. YK Kim had done like an interview or something, and Woo-Sang Park saw it and wanted to do a movie about Taekwondo. And so I guess they kind of came up with the story about friendship and about whatever, and you know, basically taking over the world with music and whatever, you know, stuff.
It was the 80s, man. There was a lot of drugs.
Yeah. And there's a lot of drugs in this movie too. And we'll get into that. But so basically it did poorly in the test audience screening kind of thing, and like an audience screening. And so basically YK Kim came in, you know, splice some other stuff together, reshot some stuff, put out basically this extra movie that we now have, you know, this movie. And so there's extra stuff that wasn't, I guess, originally in the Woo-Sang Park version of it. And we've seen that before. We've seen plenty of movies. Godfrey Ho does this stuff all the time.
Sam Cody Sands. Yeah. It's typical.
Now, that being said, do we know what he added and what was in the original version? Do we know what test audiences initially balked at? Do we know?
We do know some things. You know, we do know the whole thing with the one guy, the African American gentleman, surviving. I'm sure Moody has lots to talk about that. And yeah. I think he's the one responsible for a lot of the music too being added in.
Okay.
Okay, so YK Kim was disappointed with the original cut of the film. He wanted to reshoot some scenes, but Woo-Sang Park had already returned to South Korea. So Kim read book on film directing. He enlisted his co-star Joseph Diamond to write some new scenes, even though he had no writing experience. So Diamond read books on screenwriting, and that's how he wrote that book. That's all they say. In the original version, Jim dies at the end on the way to the hospital. However, when the film was screened at Cannes, and oh, it was screened at Cannes. I didn't even know
Get
that.
Get the fuck out of here. Screened at Cannes?
apparently that year, there weren't a lot of entries, I'm assuming.
Oh my God.
YK Kim was told by all potential distributors that the ending was a downer. Director Woo-Sang Park had already returned to Korea, so Kim himself reshot the ending. The final fight between Mark and Yoshida was added, but C.Y. Joe was unavailable, so Yoshida is played by William Engle instead. So I'm guessing that's an American that looks nothing like an Asian. Right. I don't know. I don't remember that like necessarily, but
yeah, there was one point where somebody came back and it was supposed to be another character, and I was like, wait a second, that's not right.
I was saying that a lot during this movie, though. Like, that's not right.
That's not right.
That's not right.
You know it, so
or should
yeah.
I say
right? So like I get it. I get the whole idea of wanting to reshoot it because of the ending being a downer, but I don't know.
I don't know, man. I mean, if the story is if that's what it requires, then that's what it requires. I mean, if it had been me and they'd said it ends on a downer, I'd be like, yes,
right. Well, I mean, you know, I'm a huge fan of downer endings, but that being said, I'm wondering if this thing was as goofy originally and then it just ends with a downer ending. It's like, I could see that being off-putting.
Yeah, if it's a tonal issue, sure.
Right.
I think some, and now I'm not sure what was added or, you know, spliced together. So I have a feeling some of it feels like it was changed around a bit, you know, could... You know,
there was an awful lot of cheap chop socky movies in the 80s. And this movie hits every single trope with the exception, I guess, originally of the fact that it was, you know, they all, you know, happily ever after. So that's probably what it was in order to fit in with the Jean-Claude Van Damme movies and, you know, all the other movies that were being done at the same time that are all roughly the same kind of plot, just not as weird. Right. In order to fit in with all those, it had to have a more happy ending.
So the film opened to poor box office, scathing reviews, and had been long forgotten. In June of 2009, Zach Carlson, a programmer at the Alamo Drafthouse Cinema in Austin, Texas, happened upon a seller on eBay who was selling a 35 millimeter print of it. Carlson had never heard of the film, but bought it for $35. Wow, in April. Nice. He didn't even know what he had. He just was like, $35.
Things happen.
Yeah, I'm sure he thought $35 isn't pocket change.
It's a worthy risk.
Exactly. In April 2010, Carlson screened the film at the Draft House, and it became wildly popular with cult film fans. More screenings took place to packed theaters. Draft House phoned YK Kim about distributing the film, but the film's failure was a painful experience for Kim, and the original thought was the call was a crank call. Uh-huh. Eventually, he called him three times. So called him first time, and he was like, "Hi, I'm Zach Carlson. I'm blah blah blah," and YK Kim kind of hung up on him, like you know, because he thought he was just joking with him. Second time, same thing happened. Third time, he goes, "Whoa, wait, before you hang up, I'm serious," you know. And he told him all about this stuff that he's doing, and YK Kim actually said, "Oh my God, somebody wants
someone
to just
likes your movie."
Yeah, wants to distribute. Now, see, here's the thing: we live in a world of riff tracks today. Back in '87, there was no riff tracks. I don't think Mystery Science Theater didn't even come until '90s, right?
Early '90s.
So we have a new universe now. You know, that loves, you know, these. Well, I mean, they probably always love stinky cheese.
I do love it because, I mean, yeah, there was a whole staple of hundreds of thousands of movies that I loved way back in the day, but stuff keeps popping up. This is a perfect example. Look at Fun in Balloon Land. Fun in Balloon Land, which we did, it just didn't exist except for like the 25 people in Iowa who saw it until somebody found it and sold it to the right people, and they put it out, and now people are like, "Oh my God, this is amazing!" And Riff Tracks finds it. You know, Bat Pussy labored in obscurity for years. Nobody knew what it was. Nobody even knew it existed. There was one single copy that was found in a can that it just had the word Bat Pussy put on there. So, and the study doesn't even have any credits on there. But now people are buying it, and thanks to shows like ours, people are hearing about it. This is an awesome age we're living in. We're finding these wonderful little diamonds of shit just being excavated. You know, it's wonderful. Thanks to digital media, we can now all enjoy it.
Exactly. And like you said before, Paul, this is Indie Film Cafe. We love that. We have a stinkometer, and it's not a... Most of the time, it's not because we hate the movie or something, you know, most of the time.
This time it's going to be because, at least in my case, it's going to be because we hate the movie.
Yeah,
I hate the movie. Moody. Moody was full of hate initially, but he's understood now. That's not quite like that.
Well, I mean, I think, no, I've always loved bad movies. You know, I love Plan 9. I love, you know, The Room, as was say, Birdemic, you know,
I know. But for a while, all I had to say was Actium Maximus.
Oh, no.
Steam coming out of your ears.
I still hate that movie, but that's like there's a difference. Because I get what Lenore says when she says that's a labor of love and she's a passion project and blah, blah, yes. blah. I see that as somebody's home movie that just was terrible and I don't need to see it, you know.
Right.
This movie did feel like a passion project to me. This felt like these guys really put their hard-earned money and love and tried to make something that they felt was an 80s hardcore film, you know, and it just was weird. Like, I mean, let's start from the story. Okay. Like, and I could, if you go to Wikipedia and look up this movie, if you look at the plot, they literally give you the whole plot.
Right. Oh, exactly. Yeah.
You know, and like almost like scene by scene. It's crazy.
Sure. Because it's like a fourth grader wrote it.
Yeah. And so this movie begins with like a ninja attack where they're trying to, I guess, steal the drugs and everything. Mm-hmm. But they don't steal the money, apparently. That's what Yoshida.
Right. They've got enough of that. Zoom.
Well, apparently, or whatever, because the guy's like, I got the money. You know, you guys didn't get the money. You know,
you guys suck.
Right. He's the white ninja and everybody else is all black.
Right.
So he's got to be the boss, right? You know, I mean, should it be the other way around, though?
Like, you would think, yeah.
Well, you're not supposed to ever see a ninja. That's kind of the whole point of a ninja.
So a ninja shouldn't be white. Right. So anyway, he helps them out or whatever and gets this stuff. Then we go to somewhere in Miami, I guess. Wait, is it somewhere in Miami? Yeah, something like that. Or no, they go to Orlando.
Orlando, yeah.
You know,
Orlando, yeah, the drug deal was in Miami. That was the only thing that happened in Miami.
I guess that was the only Miami connection, right? was that the title?
Yeah.
I never got, I guess.
Why isn't it Orlando connection?
Right.
Nobody gives a shit about Orlando, but Miami, you know, I mean, there's a Scarface connection going on in this film too, because some of the plot stuff reminded me of Scarface, and Scarface was set in Miami.
Right.
You know, it did very, very well. It was very popular in that point in the 80s. So I think this movie is picking up on some of that, you know.
Are you saying this is a ninja Scarface?
I think there's a little bit of Scarface in this too. Say hello to my little friend. I expected that any second.
And they didn't do it.
No, they were too busy exploring their friendship and doing kung fu with their feet in their noses. It's very weird.
So I love it. The next scene is the guys from before the biker gang and Yoshida or whatever his name is going into the restaurant or whatever the bar, right?
Right.
And they're before they get to the bar, they're loudly talking about the drugs that they're going to procure together. You
not
know,
a care in the world. Doesn't matter if there's other people in the bar or not. It's like they're that confident.
They're that confident that nobody's going to, like, you know, pick up on the fact that
there's so much awesome hairy chest and spandex heavy metal crap being played that everybody else is transfixed by it.
It wasn't heavy metal. It was like the most lamest, like, pop music I've ever heard.
Yes, that was the heavy metal of the day in the 80s. Trust
really?
Me.
Really?
I don't know about that. It was it was painful. I'll give it that.
It was painful.
Hairy chest and spandex kind of metal of the day.
People kept comparing it to Saved by the Bell's song, like the Zack Attack song.
Yeah, I can see that.
Friends Forever, you know, and it's exactly the same. There's a song where it's like, Friends Forever, and this is like, that's it. Like, literally, you know.
Yes, if My Little Pony were somehow, you know, leotard wearing hairspray 80s metal band, this would be them.
So they're a hair band, whatever, metal band, singing Taekwondo songs and being against the, and being about friendship and being against the ninja. Which I mean, honestly, I want more songs about ninjas. I mean, you know, why not?
Well, it was confusing because when I first saw the movie, I'm like, wait a second, are these guys the ninjas? Who are the ninjas?
Right. Yeah, I was thrown off by that as well.
Yeah, it was very confusing.
It was absolutely confusing. But it was one of those things where if you watch it enough and you kind of look into it, you find out, you figure this shit out. But in the first time you watch it, you're going to be very fucking confused.
Right.
Yeah, well, it was clear that these guys were way too hairy and too shirtless to be ninjas.
Yeah. So there's a rock band that knows Taekwondo. There's a biker gang that deals drugs. And then there's ninjas that deal drugs. And the biker gang is mad at the, Taekwondo band because the sister of the is dating the guy. I guess that's it.
Right.
Like that, it's West Side Story. Like, literally.
Sort of. That's part of it. But then there's this other group that, like, they used to work at the club and I guess they sucked, so they got fired. So now they're like running around and they go to beat them up and they get beat up themselves. And so they go to the motorcycle gang and like, oh, we want to join. And by the way, we're all black belts and whatever, whatever, whatever. And I was like, exactly who are these losers?
Honestly, that was very confusing because there was way too many people that I just, then you never get names for any of them that you're right. Just like, who is this guy? Yeah. Too many subgroups. You're right. Like, it's like if they had just made it like motorcycle ninjas versus Taekwondo band, I could like get it, you know.
What a perfect title that would have been.
Better than Miami Connection.
Right.
I see, that's the thing. So it was just it was very freaking confusing, you know. But anyway, I guess they all the Taekwondo band guys are study at the University of Central Florida, which isn't actually in Orlando, I don't believe. So like it's very confusing because I don't think it might be next to Orlando or something, but it's not in Orlando. And or maybe it's a sub of Orlando, but I looked it up. It's in some other part of Florida, like Jupiter or something, you know, like that. So they go there, they're there. And what was up with the guy trying to flirt with his girlfriend while she was in class?
Lord. That's
that was throwing me off as well.
That like confused me and like also made me like wonder his sanity. Like, what the hell was that?
Well, first of all, the group of quote-unquote heroes are all oddballs. They're all weird, doofy, goofus-looking guys, plus the one Asian guy that you can't understand. So,
right.
And I got the impression that they're all supposed to be orphans.
Yeah. Yeah, they're all supposed to be
orphans. That was the
And that's why they bonded, and that's why they never spend more than 5 seconds away from each other. Very strange.
Don't they basically all live in like this 2-bedroom home? There's like 15 of them. It was very confusing.
Yeah.
It's very confusing.
Yeah. And they all act like 12-year-olds or younger, you know, and it was just weird. It was such like, so I can understand like, if some of the writers of the film may be, you know, like lost in translation, maybe a little bit. So, like, some of it is off on the language, you know, but
I'm like, what do these guys do? Are they students? Do they have jobs? I can't imagine they have jobs. I know they're supposed to go for a quote-unquote world tour of their band Dragon Sound, but they're terrible, and B, I don't see how they could support that. So I'm like, what do they do all day long?
Well, I always assumed that their job was that they got booked for that one bar, right? And that's why that one bar booked them for every, you know, all the time. So that was the bit that, because apparently the other band got fired and replaced by this band, and that other band got really mad and started yelling at the guy, and both of them started yelling at each other.
Even back in the 80s, the best you could hope for, especially in a place like Central Florida, would have been like $200 a week plus bar peanuts.
Right. Okay,
that's not going to support 5 doofuses and an apartment and a car.
And I guess my thing is, I get the fact that the band was, the former band, the previous band, was upset that they got fired from the bar, but they never established that. It's like, wouldn't they be upset with the bar and not the band?
Right. Yeah. No, there would be, then they were, because they yelled at the bar manager or whatever.
I don't understand why that, what that had anything to do with the band. It's not like the band came in and said, hey, these guys suck, you should play us instead, kind of thing.
Right.
That's true. I don't understand that either, but
I never quite got the whole thing with the chick. You know, she occasionally sings with them and she's up there kind of sort of dancing around, sort of being the Linda McCartney of the group.
You're talking the sister, right?
Yeah, but she's like, her only connection is to get the other guys pissed off at them. You know, it's like their only
that is the only connection, honestly. You know, because like later on, you know, that when they see him at the school, they're like, stay away from my sister.
And, right. You know. And as soon as that plot subplot thing plays out, she's gone and she's not in the movie anymore. She doesn't sing on stage.
She's there. She sings against the ninja with them, and then she also, and that's later, and then she also at the end when her brother dies, they say I'm sorry for your, you know, that your brother died, and then she goes, oh, it's okay.
Yeah. I remember that part, but I thought the Against the Ninja was earlier than that, but I'll have to go back and check it out. But I've
watched this movie way too much right now.
I do love that part where she's like, oh, that's okay. Yeah, no big deal.
Yeah, it was so strange. It was such a strange movie. There's like things that happen in it that just kind of just happen.
Right.
Like the gym. Who's an African-American guy. By the way, they made sure to let everybody know that they're ethnically different in one scene. And it was the most awkward scene where he's like saying, you know, I'm Italian, you're Irish. You know, I'm Irish, you're Italian, he's Asian. You know, you're African-American. We're all different. We all come from different cultures.
We're all friends.
This is the problem. One of the many problems I have with this movie is, especially after hearing your story about them going in and reshooting, it's like, you're telling me that they went through and removed some stuff and added some stuff, but that made the cut? That was like, no, we have to keep that in. That's important. You know?
No. I guarantee you that was a big selling thing, is like, we have to keep the whole we have to keep it in there
because international friends forever, man,
because they wanted, that's exactly why, because they want this movie to showcase friendship from everywhere or something. They wanted to promote world peace,
right?
And I think I remember reading that, you know, these guys were all amateur actors and they were pretty much all students. They're all kind of students at the same Taekwondo school and right. Have never really acted before.
Yeah. YK Kim school.
Right.
So they all, he like pulled together.
Let's
bunch
make
of
a
people.
Movie, man, about friendship and dudes and no shirts.
This is probably one of the, like, you know, because I'm sure they spent a good amount of money on it. This is probably one of the most expensive backyard filmmaking movies you'll ever see.
Right.
You know, which, I mean, that's fine, because once again, it's a passion project. I love that. But some things just didn't make any sense. Like the Jim, the African-American, got really upset about the mail being, you know, taken away from him, or what, give me back my mail. And then when he tells them why, and we're like, wait, what? You know, like, it was all like a fun, goofy thing. Then all of a sudden it got all like depressing, you know, because his dad,
not even depressing, just stupid depressing, you know, just weird. It's like, okay,
right,
you're a grown man, really,
like out of nowhere, you know, right? So yeah, so it just
escalated quickly.
It escalated. And then, oh, by the way, I bet you guys didn't know this. The was a mailbox that they used, you know, or whatever. They actually put that mailbox in there. That mailbox was never originally there. They actually did that as part of the filmmaking process of doing it.
All that money that they spent went to good use for realism.
So they put the mailbox and he got that letter. Oh my God, I got a letter from my dad. And then they hoisted him up, and, you know, that was the funniest.
Well, it would have been funnier if they had been like, well, we thought you were an orphan, so you can't hang out with us anymore, and just would have kicked him out, but it didn't happen.
Mm-hmm. Now he's not an orphan. He's got a dad, you know? So, you know, yeah, he shouldn't be in that club anymore, you know?
Right. So they should have been like the Orphan Dragons or something. I don't know. It just, you know, this definitely has the feel of a first draft that never got a second look at, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah. You always talk about that too, Paul. You know that most, you know, a lot of times films are like that. You know, where they obviously just were like, you know, let's just go make a movie, and they already have a script. And James, right. I'm sure you've dealt with that in your.
Oh dear God, yeah, yeah.
where they clearly did not take this what they thought was finished, and then handed it over to somebody else, just a different set of eyes, and said, "Hey, take a look at this and tell me what do you think." And, you know, because when you fall in love with a project, especially if it's a pet project of your own and it's a vanity project, you're not going to see everything the way everybody else sees it. You're going to see it through rose-colored glasses, and you need to have somebody come up to you and say, yeah, this doesn't work here. Mm-hmm. No, you can't do that. Or it would be better if you did this. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. But so we kind of pretty much told the story. So at the end of the movie, they fight the big band, the biker gang steals the one guy, kidnaps the one guy.
The Italian guy.
And then somehow or another tells the people, because I don't remember them ever getting a note or anything, but somehow they know to come to that place, and then they fight them. They also fought people in a train depot, and
of course they did.
I mean, a lot of just random violence.
And in the meantime, they go to the beach and they like harass a bunch of women who are just kind of laying on the sand. Mm-hmm. And the one guy just goes up there, he's like, hey, I want you to kiss me. And Norton, and of course she just kicks his ass, because what are we gonna do with you, you ridiculous person? Why would you do that? Not even in the 80s could you get away with that.
I wonder if that was like a random person and he did that to them, like they, because at this rate, guerrilla filmmaking seems to be what this movie's all about, you know?
Right.
It was such a strange scene. Like, and then he falls on a bunch of girls, and then they all are trying to get him off of, like.
He's like dragging him off, and he can't get him to stand up, and he's just falling all over the place.
And then we watch the one dude making out with his girlfriend for like
way too long.
Way too long.
Way too long.
I was like, can we cut? You know, like, I mean, as a director myself, I do not. I go crazy about cuts, because if something goes too long, even in my own films, I cut. Because I get bored, you know, or whatever. I feel uncomfortable. I felt very uncomfortable in there. They like a couple shots. It's like,
well, you know, that girl got paid a good $40. We're going to make sure we use every bit of that footage.
Oh, this is sad. It was sad, sad, sad.
Now, this being a kung fu ninja movie of the 80s, we have to talk a little bit about the fighting and the training. Because of course there's always training montages and training stuff and fighting. Some of the fight scenes were okay. Some of them were just weird and clunky, and you could tell they're like leaning into punches and standing there waiting to be hit, because you know, if you move, it's not gonna make for a fun fight scene. So you just kind of stand there. So the timing is not there. And just the weird stuff with like the feet and the noses and the mouths. I'm like, what the hell did that come from?
Mm. James, what did you think of the fighting?
You know, it's one of those, I grew up with all the 70s and 80s, chop socky flicks, and this wasn't it. It really wasn't it. I mean, I hate to keep crapping all over this movie, but, and the sad thing is, I know I'm in the minority with this. I really do, because there are a lot of people. I remember the first time I saw the film, I used to host movie parties at my place all the time, and everybody just absolutely adored this movie. And I'm sitting there dumbfounded, like, okay, obviously this has got to be something wrong with me, because I'm bored out of my skull. So,
right.
Oh yeah. It's a crap movie. I mean, there's no getting away from it, but I do love how it, again, just like all the other movies of the same type of the same period, I love how like everybody knows how to fight martial arts. Everybody.
Right.
It's so ridiculous.
Oh, you mean even the guy who runs the restaurant or whatever, that all of a sudden just kicks everybody's ass.
And all the random biker guys.
That was the director, by the way. That guy was the director.
Was it really? I didn't know that.
Okay. Yeah.
So
that's the South Korean guy.
That's his cameo.
And I guess he got to kick everybody's ass and then say, oh, come eat. You know, like, it was just so strange. It was such a strange scene. But I loved, because those guys look like they were about to go jump in, and then it just cuts to like them coming over and saying, hey. And I was like, wait a minute. Did we miss was there a scene that got cut?
It's like a mashup of Mr. Miyagi and Mel, or whatever, the guy from the Happy Days thing, you know?
Which is the same guy.
Yeah.
Pat Morita. it's so strange. It was such it literally was Mr. Miyagi, and it was as if Pat Morita was playing both parts. That's really funny, like at the same time. which he shouldn't have been a maintenance worker. He should have worked at a diner. You know, that would have made Karate Kid a little bit more fun, maybe. but anyway, to go back to that, like, it was strange. Like, some of the fight scenes, my favorite fight scene is the end fight scene, you know, involving the ninjas attacking, and now all of a sudden everybody's dying. Because before, people are just getting hit and whatever and stuff. But now all of a sudden, like, swords are going into people. And
that's when you know it's nearly time to end the movie.
Yeah. It's just like, we're going to kill everybody off now. And then Jim was supposed to die. So when he got attacked, I thought he was going to die. And I was like, oh, shit, he's going to die before he gets to meet his dad. Oh, wow, this movie just went dark, you know? Like, it wasn't like that before. It was very light, you know? Mm. So it was weird.
It tried to be dark in a few places, but it was too stupid and ill-conceived and ham-handedly done for it to be really dark, you know?
Right, like I said, exactly.
This wanted to be a Godfrey Ho movie. It really, really did, but you know, they just didn't have the chops for it. Now, the original director, the South Korean guy, he seemed to know how to stage fights and stage some of the practices. And he's clearly a stuntman who's done a lot of other work in Asian films. But, you know, as far as being a director, I don't know, did he ever do much more beyond this? I know Kim didn't.
Yeah. So he did a bunch, actually.
Yeah, I'll bet.
He did the one I really, really want to watch. I forgot what it was called. It's like it was something crazy title. Like
Street Fighters or something, or
well, no, LA Street Fighters he did. Yeah. He did a movie called Duel of the Ultimate Weapons, Gang Justice, America Chinatown. Oh, he did a movie called Chinatown 2.
So he did quite a bit.
Chinatown 2, mm-hmm. The sequel to Chinatown.
Nice.
I don't think was the same.
All this stuff in the 80s was making money. I mean, it didn't matter if it was any good or not. I mean, remember, even if it didn't make it out on the general theater, as long as it got a VHS release in the mom and pop stores on the corner, you pretty much guaranteed to make back your investment, you know?
Yeah, let me, I know the movie because it's on, it's called Strike of the Thunder Kick Tiger. That nice. Just, and I saw a clip of that, you know, and the martial arts in that movie is freaking amazing. So I know, like, he knows his shit. So I'm really wondering, and I don't know the answer or whatever, but I'm really wondering how much of YK Kim cut out and fixed and changed when Woo Sang Park was gone, because unfortunately we'll never hear Woo Sang Park's, he's no longer with us, so we'll never hear his side.
Right. But, you know, even though this guy has experience doing all these other movies, he's still in the indie leagues, even in overseas, because clearly he didn't work for Shaw Brothers, who was Hollywood at the time, from 60s, 70s, 80s, and even into the 90s. You know, most of the really big, really popular, really well-done chop socky movies were Shaw Brothers coming from Hong Kong. And mm-hmm. I don't believe he was involved in any of that stuff. So,
oh, no. I don't see him directing, having directed anything that Bruce Lee was involved with or anything like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no. Clearly, he's more like a Godfrey Ho kind of a guy. He wants to, you know, to do that, except, you know, hopefully his other movies are a little bit more coherent than Godfrey Ho.
Yeah. So speaking of which, James, are you familiar with Godfrey Ho?
Not really. No, I don't believe so.
So explain, especially to other listeners who Godfrey Ho is.
Godfrey Ho did a lot of chop socky movies. They're always cheap. He liked to borrow scenes and sometimes entire subplots from other movies and then just throw them into the current movie he was making, whether it had any sense to do it or not. Sometimes he would just take stuff from other people's movies because, you know, overseas, they don't have the same kind of copyright laws that we have here. So you just take shit and throw it in there. It didn't really matter. And a lot of his stuff tends to have a lot more supernatural stuff. So there's a lot of like robot versus ninjas and,
right.
and vampire versus ninjas and just a lot of weird stuff, witchcraft and goofy kinds of stuff. Now, he's not quite as insane over the top as, say, as Sam Pody Sands is, which is a whole other level of batshit crazy.
Now, but, what were a couple of his titles again?
Moody, are you looking him up on
which one?
On Godfrey Hill.
Godfrey Hill.
Made like a bucket load of them.
Yeah.
He did
Vampire versus Ninja is the first one that comes to mind, but he did a lot more than that.
He did the Ninja Squad, Thunder of Gigantic Serpent, which we actually reviewed.
So bad.
Was it Thunder Ninja Kids, The Hunt for the Devil Boxer, and Challenge of the Ninja. Basically, so we reviewed Thunder of Gigantic Serpent, and basically it was a mesh of different movies. He like stole movies and put them in there.
And one of the things he liked to do was to take somebody else's movie that was released overseas somewhere in Asia,
right,
and then cut like 15-20 minutes of stuff that he shot with an American or a British actor, splice it in there somehow, whether it made sense or not, and then kicked it out towards America as a way of saying, hey, now we can make some money in the American VHS or the American market, because we have a white actor in there, and that's what they'll pay attention to. And it didn't matter whether they had anything to do with the plot. It didn't matter if there were several competing plots that never intersected. Godfrey Ho movies tend to be a mess.
They're kind of like almost what they did successfully with Raymond Burr with the original Godzilla.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So also Godfrey Ho did Robo Vampire, which reviewed. That was the one you were thinking of, I think, or whatever. But also Sam Pody Sands had done Magic Lizard and things like that. So those guys are really good at just did he do Hanneman? He did Hanneman, too, right?
Yeah, James, we have to show you Hanneman and the Five Riders. You have got to experience that.
I'm learning here. I'm all about it. Definitely. Let's do it.
I will send you a link. It will blow your mind. It will blow your mind.
We'll have to review that for a Patreon only with James, you know.
Yeah. And I'd be all for it.
Yeah. I'd love to hear your thoughts, because it is all this shit is just batshit crazy. And Miami Connection is sort of like a mesh of all these different things that, like, for American culture, you know, like it tries to like bring the Asian into the American culture and make it like, who, okay, I can understand people wanted like study Taekwondo, because I studied Shorinryu karate, you know, for I don't know, like 10 years or so, maybe longer. You know, and I loved it. Like, I loved the whole stuff, but it was nuts. And it was a lot of fun. But I'm sorry. I didn't hang out with my sensei in a two bedroom apartment and start a rock band with them. You know, I mean,
not everybody walked around with no shirts on.
Yeah, I definitely don't do that. You know, and Paul's learned his lesson with taking his shirt off. So, you know,
in the winter, yes.
So anyway, this movie was just, I mean, there was so
Chris Farley thing going on, though.
I will say, though, the songs, even though they were terrible, were a lot of fun because of how terrible they were. Like, I was just like, oh my God. And they were very catchy. And
as
well, if I'm not mistaken, Drafthouse released a vinyl soundtrack of it as well. I'm sure it's out of print as well, but I could have swore that they did.
I'm surprised. Why is this film out of print? Like, why?
Well, Drafthouse closed down as far as their media division, as far as Blu-ray and DVD. I don't even know if they ever did DVD. I know I shortly before they shut down, they had a big sale, and I grabbed a whole bunch of stuff from them.
I just don't know who owns the rights at this point.
Right.
May have even went back to
YKM,
to original directors. Yeah,
either that, or it could be public domain at this point. I don't know.
Well, I would hope that somebody like Vinegar Syndrome or somebody like that picks it up, because I think it would be great to have another release that, you know, and I would like to buy it, but
I'm not love to do a release of this. How awesome
I don't know. You can look into it, Paul. How about that?
Look into
it. I would definitely be down with that. Because, you know, we are starting a Sick Flick Productions distribution stuff. So it'd be great.
It would be awesome.
Yeah, we'd be happy. I guarantee you this would sell, you know, like hotcakes. You know, and I'm sure, you know, I'm sure there are other people looking at it. Like, I'm sure is Vinegar Syndrome or even Arrow or Scream Factory. Those guys would love to get their like grubby little paws on this because, you know, it's, you know, it's just,
maybe we could get a commentary track from David the Rock Nelson.
There we go.
Well, I know that would be random, but all right.
Yeah, but he loves those kind of movies.
Right, but no, he likes monster movies. He doesn't.
Well, he loves kung fu movies too. Yeah, listen to him talking.
Yeah, he is a big kung fu fan.
Oh, you're well aware of David the Rock Nelson, huh? Oh, James? Absolutely.
I was in one of his Devil Ant movies, apparently.
Get out of here! I had no idea.
Me and my ex-wife were both accosted by because when I wrote for Alternative Cinema. I used to talk smack about him all the time, and to the fact that Vampire Woman, Janet the Vampire Woman, actually contacted me berating me because I was picking on her husband or boyfriend.
Oh my god, that's awesome.
And he ran into me, and first I thought he was gonna beat me up, but it ends up he wanted me and my wife to appear in Devil Ant 2 or something. Nice. I'll have to send you. I found some screen caps not too long ago. I've never seen the movie if it ever came out, but yeah.
Oh, I've got the first one.
Yeah, he's got the first Devil Ant. He's threatening to show me it.
Yeah, he's, well,
this
he's
was
got a
this
plastic
was literally
ant
like
that he throws at people and goes,
so.
What was so mid 2000s is when you did it?
Oh, it was like night. It was. What was it? It was actually in 2000.
Oh,
that,
okay.
Yeah, because I don't even think I was married yet. And
right, definitely buying
accosted
that.
Me and said, and basically threw this rubber ant at me. And I'm like, and he's like, react. And I'm like, okay. Just take my wallet. It's fine. Just go.
Dude, I got to show you the link. Vice did a whole episode on him for like almost half an hour talking about him and his movies and just the way that he is and as an outsider movie creator, and it's priceless, absolutely priceless.
Yeah.
Did you ever see his John Stewart appearance when John Stewart was still running the Daily Show? Isn't that amazing?
I saw it because he sent me the link the first time that I added him as a friend on Facebook. It's just like first message, hey, your name is John and I was on John Stewart. And I was like, okay. And then he sent me the link and I watched it and I was like, because I had known him from Edward D. Wood Jr.'s one of his movies, and there was a like behind the scenes, and there was like a guy who claimed to be the Ed Wood of the 90s, and that was David the Rock Nelson. And there was like I saw clips of Mummy AD and you know, things like that, and I just thought, oh, okay, this guy seems kind of cool. And then I looked him up and found him on Facebook years later, and I think I might have even been MySpace friends with them or something. So
okay.
I've been friends, you know, I've known this guy for a while, and then all of a sudden, you know, I'm getting accosted on Facebook about it. And when he writes to me, like he writes like a Bible, you know, like it's
he I mean literally I trust me, I've gotten letters as well, and it's like
awesome.
Whoa.
Yeah. Which is why he's the perfect guy to do the commentary for Miami Connection. How awesome would that be? What a train wreck that would be.
He would just
when you got messages from him, and I don't know, like I said, this was very early internet when I was in contact with him. So he would send in these like multiple page, both side handwritten letters, just freaking out that we had trashed his movies in Alternative Cinema. And it was literally like getting a letter from John Doe from Seven. It was terrifying.
Oh God. So, well, our last episode of season four, God, why I say season two, season four was Miss Werewolf, which was a movie he did. So that was our last movie in it. And we did not, we were
now,
not
when
kind
did that come out?
It.
I'm editing it as we speak. It came out in 2001.
You're saying that movie came out in 2001?
Yeah, the original
God
movie.
God knows how long, you know, he shot it. Probably was shot over a course of many years.
Is he and Janet the Vampire Woman still a thing? Or
movie they were, yeah.
If David the Rock Nelson and Janet the Vampire Woman can't stay together, no one can. That's the way I look at it. There's no such thing as love if they're split up.
Paul says they were on again, off again. So who knows?
Yeah.
That breaks my heart. That absolutely.
Well, and then she pops into that Vice episode. So Trust me, you want to watch it. It's amazing.
Oh, I definitely want to check it out.
So this movie, Miami Connection, has been covered by Red Letter Media, Riff Tracks, Cinema Snob, everybody pretty much. And that's almost the reason I almost didn't want to do it originally.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, because it has already been
too, because
covered, you know, covered. But I figured the thing is, people are going to be looking this up, you know, and everything. And we want people who want to get a different perspective on this, you know, or whatever, you know, like somebody's right. Looking up podcasts, they're going to look up Miami Connection most likely. And they'll say, oh, Indie Film Cafe covered it. You know, we'll check that out. And I just thought, you know, so all you people that are checking this out who have never heard of us, thank you for checking this out and everything. Because I think we should do a little bit more popular movies from time to time because of that, you know. But that's
I tend to do fairly obscure ones that nobody's ever heard of.
Right.
Try to turn people onto it so they can say, where the hell did you dig this up from?
Mm-hmm. Well, and then the problem is people aren't searching for those films necessarily, you know, so they might stumble across our podcast, but we got to get people to stumble in across our podcast then, you know, first, and then they'll see it in the, you know, in the. Yeah,
but that's why it works for you and me, because, you know, while I find the obscure stuff, you're bringing in stuff like Miami Connection, and that's already has a built-in audience,
which right, exactly. And I think that, yeah, no, that's exactly, that's how we are, and that's how we are on most you know, most stuff that we do. Film Freaks, I'm more of the popular Hollywood guy, you're more of the, you know, obscure ones that you like. So I love,
I've been collecting since VHS's came out. I mean, mm-hmm. I've just been one of those nerds forever and ever and ever, and I still buy stuff.
And
so
honestly, I think James, you're like a mixture of both of us, you know, in a way.
I can see that, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Like you probably know a lot of the stuff that Paul knows or whatever. And then you also like all this, you know, a lot of the stuff I like. I'm actually happy you didn't like Miami Connection because of you know, I just love getting a different perspective on this, you know.
Again, I have no excuse though, because like I said, there are certain movies that for some reason I just don't connect with, and that one I really, really, maybe I hyped it up in my mind too much because I was really looking forward to it, and I literally was I wanted to take a nap. I really wanted to take a nap.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is this particular type of movie is pretty much a dime a dozen. You know,
right.
there were so many of them made. They're all pretty much the same. The thing about this one is that it's you know, less professionally made, more ham-handedly executed than most.
Right.
You know?
And to me, that's absolutely fun because, you know, if you can just sit there, I'll tell you guys this. So, and I think I told Paul about this before on Facebook, but I was watching this the first night, a couple nights ago with Jackie Hall.
Yeah.
And she was on the phone with me, and we're watching it and we're laughing. And so after a while, just about 30 minutes in, I was like, oh, that's ugly. I can't believe they did that. And then I was like, hello. Hello, I could hear the stuff in the background, and turned out that Jackie fell asleep. So just like you, James, this just was not her cup of tea or whatever, right. Which I'm glad we didn't ask her to come on, because she wouldn't have been able to, you know.
I was going to say she could give a review for the first half of it.
So. Yeah, that's pretty much that's kind of what happened with you know, with other episodes of the show too. I can't spoil anything and that's coming
the
up.
Other thing too is that this movie is so painfully earnest. They really, 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 really tried with all their tiny little mites put
they
together.
Did I mean I will give them that they did,
you they, know, it just didn't work
right. I mean, and that's the thing, you can try and try and try, but like if it's just not there, you know, your trying is not going to matter.
There's right. there's an element of Ed Wood to this particular film that to me gives it a little bit more, you know, it's like kicking a puppy, you know, you just can't do it.
You know? Well, I think we're about to get into our review section, and we're probably going to be kicking that puppy a little
kicking
bit.
Kicking the puppy. You
know? Right.
It's a sad thing, but like it's
time to kick that puppy.
I know. So we're at that time. So before we get into it, I wanted to first of all, thank you, James, for for agreeing to be on the show and everything.
Oh, it's always a pleasure. Absolutely.
So, Paul, explain to everybody what the stinkometer is.
Okay, so our stinkometer is a score by which we take from 1 to 10, all three of our reviewers, and the less amount of stink there is, the lower the score, and the higher the amount of stink, the higher the score. So if you think the movie is really good, you'd give it a 1. If you think it's kind of meh, you'd give it a 5. And if you think it's a big old steaming pile of crapola, you would give it a 10. Even though sometimes those big steaming pile of crapolas are a lot of fun and you enjoy it, you still would give it a 10 because it's not a very good movie at all.
Or a 5. And
then, yeah. Okay. Whereas a 5 is just kind of, you know, it's bad. It's got some good points. It's kind of meh.
You can also...
It does go to 10 then.
Okay, it does go to 10. Yep.
Okay, and, I'm sorry. I misunderstood. Okay.
Yeah, and then if you feel subtle about it, you can give it a half step. So a 6.5 or 7.5 or 2.5, whatever, you know. So, and then we total up the three scores and then we compare it with the rest of the movies that we saw during the season. And then we figure out what was the stinkiest movie of the season. Mm-hmm. And we have a running total going with our ladder of stink. And we've had some serious stinky movies up there. So it'll be very curious to see where this one ranks.
All right. So James, so I think you have an idea of what you want to score and everything. We let our guests sometimes go first.
Yeah. You know, I mean, I can, if you'd like me, if you don't feel quite comfortable.
No, I'll be more than happy to. I will say this. Paul actually convinced me to rate it a little higher with his mentioning or his reminder that it went, at least that you could tell they were passionate about it. Their hearts were in the right place. Originally, if it's going from 10 being the stinkiest to 1 being a lot of fun, originally I was going to give it a 10. But that being said, the more I think about it, I'm going to bump it up to a 7.
Oh.
Just because of the fact, you know what, they tried. God love them, they tried. I may not have cared for it, but you know what? Let's give them the 7.
All right.
Very good.
Okay. That's funny. I actually am going to go higher than you on this. I was going to give a 9.5. And,
oh, really?
Yeah. And the main reason for that is because even though it, you know, it has its moments of passion and everything, it's still a bad movie. Like, it's terrible.
Completely.
Like,
yeah.
It's absolutely, it's, but because it does have that little passion and that love and everything, I do have to give it, you know, a lesser score than a 10, you know, because it was competently made enough, you know, where
right.
there were scenes where, you know, it looked like they were trying. It's just then the other scenes didn't look like they were trying.
Right.
It just kind of screwed it over. So I'm going to give it a 9.5. What about you, Paul?
Well, it's definitely a bad movie. It's definitely incompetent. There are things, though. I mean, we could see it. We could hear them. There are movies that we have that don't even manage to get over that threshold.
Actium Maximus.
Yeah. you know, there are worse movies than this. Having said that, it's still pretty bad. To me, this is a solid 8.5.
Okay.
Okay.
So, that's fair.
Wow. So let me get this straight. I walked in here saying that this was just absolutely pitiful, and I gave it the highest score. How does that work exactly?
Gave it the best score. Yeah. Yeah. That's because you have heart, James.
Apparently so. Apparently, I'm worried that you guys are going to review like Humanoids from Atlantis or something. So.
Oh no. I mean, we probably will one day. But but it, like, here's the thing. We enjoy stinky movies anyway.
Right.
So if we rate it high, like a Neil Breen movie gets a 10 with us, but it's a right. 10 with our hearts. You know,
remember, okay.
we
make sure that these are movies that people, you know, we want to show them. You know, if we disliked a movie, we hated a movie, it would never be on the show. We would never
be on the show. There's been some that we've hated that. But...
All right, well, with that in mind, and not to be a pain on my first appearance, but can I change mine to an 8 then?
Yes, please. If you want
okay.
to
yeah. upscale,
with that in
sure.
mind,
we'll
I am going to kind of stick a little closer to my guns and say I'm going to give it an 8. I still think it's higher than what you guys gave it, but I don't want to go too overboard with something that I think is really a complete piece of crap.
So it's okay, James. You come on our show a few times, you'll pick up the hang of it real quickly.
That's right. So I'm still a novice. I don't have a lot of a savvy with this just yet. So
I'm just letting you know, I regretted my Actium Maximus rating originally, because in the second season, the first episode, Paul decides to show me Actium Maximus, and I fucking hated it. And I thought, there's no way he's going to show me a 10 on our first outing, you know? So I gave it a 9.5 because I thought there would be something worse, and I regretted There was worse, but not much worse.
Right. Well, and that's the thing, man. Once you go down this rabbit hole, you will never say the words, "Oh my God, this is the worst movie I've ever seen," because you will find something that's worse. You will always find something worse.
Yes.
It's wonderful.
Yes. Yeah, so I don't know. It's, you know, it's one of those movies where I think like you, James, you didn't necessarily enjoy it. You know, it's not your cup of tea. You wouldn't watch it again. It sounds like you're going to try to sell your print on eBay. So
to the highest bidder. Yes.
Yeah. Go right ahead. I tell you what though, James,
this may be, in my opinion, for you, this might be one of those movies where, had you been in the studio with us and we all watched at the same time, and we all kind of reacted and laughed at the same time, I think you might have had a better feeling or a better time seeing this movie.
Normally agree with you on that, Paul, but honestly, the audience that I saw it with absolutely adored it. Thought it was the funniest thing in the world. Was laughing at all the right and all the wrong parts. Just absolutely, we're singing the songs. Oh, I mean, God. Everything. And I literally sat there. It was literally for me like getting a root canal. It really was.
Oh, there you go. There you go. That
was your 8 days a week then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Paul hated the movie 8 days a week.
Yeah, I remember you telling me about that. Yeah.
Yeah. And he just, like, the whole time he's just cringing and everything. And I'm just like, oh, wow, this is what it feels like to torture Paul.
I gave away my secret.
I mean, bad comedies seems to be the thing. There will be other bad comedies on Indie Film Cafe. Just because because that's part of Indie Film Cafe, you know.
And I'll tell you, man, that's why comedy is tough. Comedy is tougher than horror.
Oh yeah,
much tougher, you know. And that's why they're so much more painful to experience.
Yeah, well, yeah, because it's tough because there's timing and there's things, you know, just like there's just like fighting, you know, there's got to be timing when you punch. You were saying earlier.
You got to hit that humor that's universal, because fighting and excitement is universal. Everybody loves that. But what I find funny might not necessarily be what you find funny. Oh, exactly. And that's a big problem.
Right. Well, then it goes ahead with horror. Horror, you know, there's some things you don't like, Paul. You don't like girls getting, you know, pretty girls getting, you know, gutted and killed or whatever, because you think it's just, you know, that's just.
Why would you do that? The world needs more.
So does that mean it's okay for it to stab ugly girls on film? Is that
Well, I was thinking more along the stabbing guys, but yeah.
Okay. Sure. I just wasn't sure. I wasn't sure what the guideline was. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the thing. If a pretty girl is fighting back and killing, you know, whatever, he's down with that. Buffy. But if it's Buffy, you know. But
and then just, you know, torture porn in general, I'm just not a big fan of. There's just something creepy about, you know, the idea that somebody out there is shooting this person being tortured and tormented and blood and gore, and that I am supposed to find enjoyment in that.
Right.
That creeps me the fuck out.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, I absolutely. And that the person who's shooting that is enjoying shooting it, you know, can kind of make me feel a little cringy. So I get it. I don't like torture porn myself. I don't think I've ever written it.
I will watch it depending on how bad it is, because I have a whole bunch of extreme movies too. We've talked about doing an extreme movie show at some point.
Well, we're supposed to do that sometime, but we'll see. I don't know,
because you know, art is all about making you uncomfortable, about making you see things that you don't want to see. You know, and I think Kate Phoenix and you talked a little bit about that too on one of the shows. And so even though I don't like it, it doesn't mean that I won't watch it, especially if it turns out to be done in such a way that you can look at it and say, okay, wow, this is actually, you know, this is actually pretty good, even though I don't like the subject matter.
We talked about that on Pink Flamingos, where yes. I didn't hate the movie. I actually liked the movie. I thought I was going to hate the movie and going to like be closing my eyes the whole time. I
did close my eyes. Your eyes the whole time.
Not the whole time.
Jonathan, how can you possibly hate a movie with Divine? Come on.
I didn't hate it. I didn't hate it. I thought there were cringy scenes and stuff, and I'm not really into that, you know, like myself. Like I don't like things. I don't. Prolapse scene wasn't fun. Things like that don't interest me, but that movie was actually a lot better than I expected.
And right. Well, they don't necessarily interest me either, but it's the reaction of you watching the movie that interests me.
Yeah. So you have to show people. And Kate loved it. Absolutely enjoyed it. And it was her kind of favorite thing. So she was the one trying to nudge me to watch movies. Cause I don't really want to watch like Cannibal Holocaust. But she says, as a filmmaker, I should watch.
I
100% agree with her. Yeah. I mean, what's funny, I love Pink Flamingos. I think it's a great film. I think it's phenomenal. I'm a huge John Waters fan, but it's actually not my favorite John Waters film. Female Trouble is actually, in my opinion, like it's just an absolutely amazing movie.
That's on Criterion.
Oh, yeah, I've got it.
Yep. Nice.
And it's funny because it's not even John Waters' favorite movie. He's always been saying, you know, I still don't understand why that's the movie that everybody talks about for me.
Right.
I talk about Serial Mom. I'm sorry. Yeah. But see, I'm such a PG-13 kind of guy. You know? Yeah. And that's what I like. You know, I grew up on that. You know, Scream, even though R, is PG-13 horror to me. You know, and that's why he doesn't like it. That's why I love it. Like, that's my style.
I'm not a fan of the Scream series at all. I'm just not.
But see, two are a little older anyway. And
ouch. A little older. But damn, like, taking off the gloves there,
hey,
John.
Man, I took my shirt off.
He's like, don't make me turn and take it off again.
Do it, man.
When in 1996, I was in high school. Right. You know? And so that was a high school movie, you know, and everything. You guys, you know, might not have been in high school then.
No, I was much out of high school at that point. My thing with the Scream films, honestly, and maybe this is just me being petty, for Wes Craven being the horror icon that he was, I thought that it was a slap in the face to fans. I thought it was basically a way of saying, hey, you guys are stupid and this is why.
Yeah. I'm going to be meta and you're going to enjoy it.
Exactly. You know?
Yeah. I could get that. I also felt like it was also a love letter to fans. So, you know, like saying, hey, you know what? We all know the rules and we're going to kind of like, even some people weren't into horror. This is, to me, it's a gateway to horror. You know, and
yeah, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm cynical, but to me, the love part of the letter is we love taking your money.
Mm. Exactly. I couldn't agree with you more.
Yeah, you guys are a bunch of downers. Jesus.
I'm sorry. It might even be the reason that I feel that literally there has never been. I grew up loving Wes Craven. And honestly, with revisiting all of his stuff, I don't think there's a movie he's made, including Nightmare, that's held up. I know that's a controversial statement, but I
agree. He's a good director, but he hasn't made any great movies.
Are you kidding me? Have you guys seen People Under the Stairs? Jesus.
Oh,
Christ.
Boring.
Oh, boring. You guys suck. That's like one of my
that was freaking, I mean, it was a bomb when it came out.
Oh, I know, but it's a fucking amazing movie, and I still, yeah. I mean, I love it.
The closest he ever came to greatness was the NSYNC Gloria Estefan movie.
that's a shame.
What about, well, you guys didn't like Serpent in the Rainbow?
Mm-mm, yeah, I like Serpent in the Rainbow.
I didn't care for it. I'll give you the perfect example for me for my feelings about Wes Craven's films. I was a huge fan growing up of the original Hills Have Eyes. Just absolutely adored that film. I thought it was creepy as hell. It was amazing. So when Alexander Aja remade it in 2006, I was pissed in the same way that I was pissed that Zack Snyder was remaking Dawn of the Dead. So I went to the theater to see it, and I shockingly enough absolutely loved the remake. And it actually made me want to go back and revisit Hills Have Eyes, the original, because I hadn't seen it in a while. And I'll be damned if I was not bored out of my skull rewatching a movie that I for decades thought this is the pinnacle of horror. And it's just, That's how it's been with all of Wes Craven's film. I remember enjoying them very much as a kid and a teenager. And then as an adult watching it going,
Yeah, at least with The Hills Have Eyes, a lot of that hinges on Michael Berryman.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
If you don't have Michael Berryman in that movie, I it's just nothing.
You know?
Well, I thought Dee Wallace did a great job in it.
Dee Wallace is great in it. Yeah. But
honestly, that movie kind of did bore me itself, it's not, it's too cliche-ish, right.
Well, as a kid, that thing scared the hell out of me. I'll be honest with you. I was completely freaked out by the concept, the actual, but now looking back on it, it's like, especially now. And again, I'm not typically a remake guy. I'm not typically pro remake, but I got to admit, I had a lot of fun with the Hills Have Eyes remake, and they actually had mutants versus just weird looking people. So,
well, I mean, for me, it came after I had already seen like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Dawn of the Dead and Night of the Living Dead. So it didn't quite have the same impact when I first saw it, because to me, it just didn't quite hold up to the rest of those movies, but I still thought it was pretty good.
Right.
Yeah. It's definitely a fun movie, but it's just like there are points where I'm just like, I'm kind of bored because I've seen this before, and stuff. And that's kind of what Paul's, I guess, alluding to. So,
yeah. And it's a shame because that's not the movie's fault. It came out in 1974.
Oh, exactly. It's just dated. But that's the thing. So that being said, we can give it a pass for being dated. Dawn of the Dead's dated. I've watched that at least 7 times a year, and I've never been bored.
I really just did not like Dawn of the Dead, but I'm not a zombie person.
I love
Jonathan, I'm afraid I have to go. It was nice talking to you though. Thank you so much for having me on.
All right, star of Zombie Cop.
Featured in Zombie Cop. Don't make featured. It worse.
We'll have you back, I hope.
Yeah, I'll be back. Why don't we just? I think Paul and I are going to have the show next time.
There you go. I'll show you something stinky. Don't you?
Right,
don't
there
you
we worry. Go.
No. Oh my goodness, you're going to kick me off, and then you're going to bring J.R. Bookwalter on, instead.
That would be awesome. I'd love to talk to him.
Jonathan, you know we love you.
I don't like zombies, and B, I don't like movies usually that take place in one location. I've talked about this on multiple things. So there's very rare that a movie can, attract me if they're all in one location. I just watched a movie that was all in one location and I absolutely loved it. And it was because the location was a house and they utilized every room in the house.
Which house? There's a witch in a house.
Yeah, let's not talk about that. I like Witch House 3, which we did on the Indie Film Cafe. But the whole thing that I didn't like that. It's already got a strike against it because I'm just not a fan of like one location movies.
I get it. No, that's I completely get it. But I don't agree with it, but I get it.
I know. Looking back at it, I mean, I did get to visit the mall. But I was half drunk, so I didn't enjoy it as much because I was sobering up and it was not the greatest experience. Plus I wasn't familiar that well with the movie, so the people that were bringing me were all excited and going around. I was not,
Well, the thing about it is that it is much, much more than a zombie movie. There is so much going on. There is so much commentary of the politics and society at the time. It has many, many, many levels, and that's why it remains a fabulous, fabulous movie.
And that is also probably why I hated it too. I hate politics and I hate political, things or whatever.
It actually fluctuates between four different films. It literally fluctuates between my favorite film of all time. Sincerely,
it's a great film.
Hey, look, I'm not saying, like you can say you hate Scream, and that's one of my favorite movies. I don't give a crap.
But,
you know,
everybody's opinions are different. You know, exactly. I'm just busting balls here.
I know. And I'm okay with that because you know what? We watched Miami Connection. And
exactly. So- I will say this much. I liked Scream 1,000 times more than I liked Miami Connection.
I don't think Paul feels the same. Oh, yeah. It made him scream. Miami Connection made you scream.
Yeah.
Okay. James, what have you been up to lately?
I am in pre-production on my third directorial effort, it's one location, and I guess technically it could be considered a torture porn movie. So,
oh boy.
you're going to hate it. You're going to absolutely hate it, but it's got Sasha Graham in it. So maybe you'll love it. I don't know. So.
I'll love anything Sasha's in. I love her.
But now let's put it this way. The best way I can describe it is, it's a thinking man's torture porn. How about that?
Okay. So, okay.
I'll watch it because you made it anyway.
Aww.
You know? I love you. I told you I was one of the, I was one of the people that you showed her name was Krista to while you were doing stuff. And I just like, when I watched just the rough cuts of it, I was like, wow, I was blown away by it and everything. Oh,
thank you. That's always going to be my baby. So yeah. I'm trying to kind of get back into that mindset, because it's one of those where it's like you do the serious film first, then you do the fun film, then you do another serious film. So
exactly. And then you did the fun film. You did Brimstone.
We did the fun film. Yeah, you co-wrote one of the stories. So.
I did. It was funny.
We had a fun time with that.
I don't think I told you this story, but Paul and I were at Scares at Care, and there were a bunch of short films being shown. One of them was called Mama's Boy. I was like, uh-oh. What is that? I hope this is nothing like similar to what we did. So right. I had Paul go see it, because I think I was busy like at the table or something or whatever, and Paul hated it. Yeah, it was nothing like ours. It was weird as fuck from what I heard.
Yeah, and definitely.
It was nothing. But anyway, Kaylee was great in that. Sasha was great in that.
Oh yeah. The movie itself is a fun time. It's one of those where I wanted to do something a little less serious and more just fun. And I think we accomplished that. I really do.
We did.
And, James, if you need like a murderer running around killing people in a cow suit, I'm your man.
I will absolutely keep that in mind. I am all for it. As long as it's not, as long as it's not pretty girls.
There you go.
Yeah. He's got to kill all the guys and then set all the pretty girls free.
He's just coming up with the movie.
His milkmaids. That's
perfect. I'm going to get writing. Jonathan, you got to come with me. We'll go write it.
I'll start it. Then you'll finish it. And
exactly.
Make it like a, you'll turn it to a crazy ass movie that which worked really well. I mean,
I love throwing a monkey wrench in that. I really did, because I knew you had you had no clue what I was going to do with it. And I'm like, what can we do that's really going to throw people off? Oh, I know.
And you did. And the funniest thing is, I think you were afraid I was going to say like, what? And, completely get mad. But I was like, dude, that was not what I was expecting. All right, let's keep that.
I have a nasty habit of that though, because what was it? A couple of years ago, somebody was trying to do a remake/sequel to, oddly enough, Zombie Cop. They had reached out to me to write the treatment, and I wrote something completely batshit crazy, and they never spoke to me again about it. It was like, okay, apparently that's not what you were looking for.
Well, I mean, did they have JR's permission to do that?
I think it was one of those where they wanted a spec script, but just a treatment first to go to him and say, hey, this is what we want to do. We have your blessing. And that never came to be.
So, I mean, he pretty much disowned that movie, didn't he?
He did. Yeah. But I mean, now that the shot on video box is out, I think he's a little more forgiving of those movies. So,
yeah.
Get a very good review from us.
Well, it was
okay, because I'm not forgiving of those movies. So.
I know. I don't think he's even really that forgiving. He's just like,
I think he's accepted it. He's accepted what they are and kind of went from there.
It is what it is. I mean, you know,
I mean, considering that he did a limited run of 300 of those box sets and they sold out, he's got to be, he may not be forgiving, but he's certainly appreciative of them now. So,
and, you know, hopefully he understands. I mean, even though we are all big, big Tepe fans, and we all have been for a long time, we love it. We love all his stuff. We got to be honest. And
exactly. No, that's the thing. It's like,
we're going to say what we're going to say, you know.
Well, I will be the first to admit, of the six, in my opinion, of the six shot on video movies that we did, in my opinion, Kingdom of the Vampire is the best one. And I'm not even in the fucking thing. It just pisses me off. So
you were supposed to be the lead.
I was supposed to be the lead. And unfortunately, it just so happened I was out of town the week they shot it. And it's like, sorry, I can't do it.
I have not seen that and I need it badly.
It's fun. Matt, I think it's a fun little Martin-esque kind of take on the vampire thing. Matt Walsh is a lot of fun in it.
It's a fun movie. I like that. I also really like The Sandman, which I don't think really gets talked about a lot, but that was a lot of fun to me too.
I actually, believe it or not, hate The Sandman more than I hate any of the shot on video stuff.
Wow.
And it probably has more to do, less to do with the movie and more to do with the making of, because that was just an absolutely horrible movie. I didn't go to the premiere. I didn't see the actual movie in its entirety until we recorded the DVD commentary like 10 years later. So I just refused.
Yeah, it's interesting because I have heard and I've talked to other people in other movies that you would expect them to really enjoy it, but if they have a very bad experience during the production, it just mars their whole memory
completely,
of the film.
Yeah. I mean, which makes total sense, because like if you have a bad, you know, it's not like having a bad taste in your mouth, you know, or whatever.
I mean, Shelley Duvall, it took her years to finally get around to saying, okay, I get everybody loving The Shining, but she had such a horrible experience in it, you know.
Oh, exactly.
Yep, exactly. So, I mean, we get it, James, but, you know, it's weird because it's weird for you to like look back at those movies and actually try to enjoy them when you're all of a sudden just thinking about the terrible experience you had on.
Right.
So,
oh, absolutely.
Do you guys like, you know, regret the fact that you guys never really did a sort of 80s chop socky kind of ninja movie? Like,
I know I do. I mean, I absolutely do. I would have loved to have had no martial arts experience whatsoever and attempted to do it. I think that would have been a blast.
And you can still make that movie.
What about Robo Ninja? You know, come on.
Well, that's the thing that amazes me. It's like there's no robots and no ninjas in that. So it's like, how does that work?
Well, I think that was the comic character, right, or something.
It was, but still, I think there were a lot of people that were upset that they didn't get to see more martial arts. But
that's a movie that should be remade. You know,
there you go.
And remade the right way.
I mean, there's always time. You know?
Yeah. I mean, Robo if JR is down with it,
I'll be happy to come on board on a cameo.
What was your character in that one? I forgot.
I was Gordon Scully, the Weasley, the Weasley rapist.
Oh, wait, wasn't that the same character from
I show up as Scully and Skinned Alive and Zombie Cop, and he makes an appearance in a movie that I don't even know if it got released called Urban Legend with me and Ariana that Wayne Allen Harold had done.
Ariana.
Yeah. We love Ariana as well. So, you know, I've got to show them at some point. We're going to do Bloodletting, because that movie is the movie that turned me on to Tempe, period. So
you should probably wait until February, because the new Blu-ray is coming out.
Ooh.
I'm definitely buying that.
I actually, what was it? JR entrusted me to do quality control on it. And I've got to say, it looks absolutely fucking stunning.
Who is releasing it?
Makeflex. They went live with it with the pre-orders over Black Friday, then they're gonna start back up, I believe, at the beginning of the year. They're just prepping it right now. I actually just shot some interviews in Cincinnati with Paul Morris and David Levy, who were the jogger and the father victims. Nice. And then Ariana just turned in an interview for it as well. So.
Nice. Can we get a link for that? Because I definitely want to go and buy a copy myself.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's like I said, I think the Makeflix site, I don't think it has it listed It was just a brief pre-order during what was it, during Black Friday, but they're going to put it back up, I believe, at the first of the year. So as soon as that's up, I'll send it your way.
And please do, because then we'll put it up there so people can get it as well.
Oh, absolutely.
Because like I said, Bloodletting is the movie that got me turned on to Tempeh. And then I watched as many of the other ones as I could and everything. And
but it's going to be really, like I said, JR always does a great job with his remasters.
I would love but to this see completely East stunned versus me. West mashup. I always wanted to see an East West mashup with Tempeh and Chris Seaver. Along the line, that movie has to be made. I don't know what
you
would be.
You want Butch Harlow to fight Teen Ape?
There you go. Perfect.
that would be funny. Yeah,
that would be awesome.
I would love that, but. I mean, the funny thing is that could happen because of Tempeh being involved with both projects.
Oh, exactly.
You know, and everything. So it's not, you know, a different studio or whatever.
I'm sure he likes Tempeh too. So I know he watches all those movies.
Well, I think the biggest thing is I guarantee you, if he came to Chris Seaver with $5,000, $10,000 or whatever and JR and said, could we do this? I bet they would be like, sure. You know?
Yeah. So, oh, absolutely.
That's just a matter of money, really, because you telling Chris to do this, he would probably be like, no, I'm not interested in doing that right now, you know.
Right.
Imagine Zombie Cop being played by the Sex Squatch. How awesome would
that be?
There
we go.
We got to get Chris on as a guest speaker for Indie Film Cafe. Like, hear his reviews with us.
yes.
Like, he's very vocal about his opinions, period. Mm-hmm. You know,
he doesn't like a lot of independent stuff,
right?
No, he likes mainstream stuff way more than, you know, like he likes Spider-Man and, you know, all that stuff, you know, Star Wars, you know. So it's great to see that, you know, like, you know, I'm sure if we did Todd Sheets' film, he'd be okay with that.
Right.
And it's a shame because he doesn't seem to really like a lot of his own movies. And, you know, I don't know what to say other than the fact that they've always entertained me.
Right.
Right.
You know, I'm sure they've entertained millions, you know, and everything. So, I mean, who knows? Once again, I think it goes to a lot of it's the making of process. He doesn't like the remembering the making of it or whatever. I think that's what he said to us. So,
right. I can see that.
Yeah.
Yeah. The birthing process can be very, very tough. And then you take it out on your child.
Yeah. Especially when the baby comes out sideways.
Yeah, or misbegotten.
All right. Well, on that note, I think, thank you so much, James, for coming on. If you stick around, we'll chat with you some more, but, everybody else, thank you guys for listening. For our first episode back, I wanted it to be a little longer than we normally do it anyway, and I enjoyed this conversation. So I hope you guys did too.
And it's a little longer.
That's what she said, right? So thank you guys so much. Tune in next week. We'll have another episode that I'm doing. And then the week after that will be Paul again. So we're going to be doing 3 episodes per month. And we're trying this out and seeing how it goes. And I think Paul's going crazy. His mind's being blown, you know, that he has to do all this. But, you know, he's a good egg. He's getting it done.
I got so many movies to share. It's tough. It really is.
We want to get as many done as we can before.
James, at some point, we'd love to have you come for a visit. Come out to the studio. We'll put you up. We'll sit you down. We'll have you watch a pile of movies. We'll get a bunch of pizza, maybe, you know, some snackage. And we can knock out a bunch of movies. That'd be awesome.
I would absolutely love that. You let me know, man. Definitely.
I just won't buy Miami Connection again.
Right. Yeah. Just no Miami Connection.
Well, thank you once again. And everybody, thank you guys for listening. And check us out. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.